Good morning, everybody, or afternoon. I guess it depends on where you are. Welcome to another episode of the Justice Revolution. I'm your host, James the Patriot, and I am flying solo today. Both of my wonderful co-hosts are unavailable with us this morning. Erica is having some issues on her urban homestead. Let's just leave it at that. And Justice was unable to join us this morning. She had to attend some things with her family. So I am flying solo for the moment, but I do have a wonderful guest with me. I'll bring her on here in a minute. So I just wanted to say thank you all for tuning in again. It's been a little while. I apologize. Our last broadcast was July the 3rd, which I really felt was a really good episode. You guys know me. I love history. I love covering history. I love talking about it. And so if you didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, do so. I actually, you know, my wife, I love her to death. Like I think I mentioned you guys earlier, but we just celebrated our 20-year anniversary. I can't even believe that, but 20 years we've been married. Anyway, she always makes fun of me for these shows. She's like, you know what? You're doing so great. You've got dozens of followers. I was like, I know I do. So she's like, I might actually listen to that episode. I was like, well, I hope you do, because I think you'll find it insightful. Dr. Graves brings some really good stuff to the table, and I really enjoyed diving into the fantastic mind that was Thomas Jefferson and who he was as an individual, who he was as a Christian, who he was as one of our founding fathers. So with that, I do want to put a little plug out there. And I'm not going to go into too much detail on this, out of respect for my guest today, but yesterday my wife and I had the opportunity to go see that movie Sound of Freedom. I know a lot of you know who Tim Ballard is, you know who Operation Underground Railroad is. I would just say do your own research, you know, as to who he is as an individual and his organization, but look past that and try to see the overall message of that movie, which is to bring awareness to human trafficking. The sad reality, everyone, is that there are more human beings in bondage today than there ever were in the entire history of the slave trade when slavery was legal. That should really open your eyes. It's like, and the sad part is you often don't even know it. Like I quite frequently, I travel a lot, as you guys know, for work. And so I'm always walking through airports and there's hundreds of people and, you know, little kids everywhere. And I'm quite positive. You just don't know, but I'm quite positive I've walked by some who are currently victims of this disgusting, depraved crime. So there was a message at the very end of the film by the lead actor, Jim Caviezel. I just say go see the movie. They're doing something very, very unique in that I don't believe this is the case for my audience, but if you're unable to pay to see the movie in the theatrical release, they have a pay it forward where you can go onto their website. It's angel.com/ Sound of Freedom, or excuse me, Freedom, I believe. One of those two. Just search for Sound of Freedom, angel.com/freedom, excuse me. And you can actually get a ticket there. They had a goal of getting people to purchase 2 million tickets. There's almost 9 million tickets available. So they're doing their job of getting the message out about human trafficking, which is fantastic. And like I said, I would just, you know, whatever you feel about the characters of the movie and this and that, just set that to the side. The biggest message is this, and this is so true, is that God's children are not for sale. So I'm just going to leave it at that. So, all right, everyone. Thank you for those of you who are joining us live. Appreciate you guys for being here. Andrew, Rise of the Republic, C to AZ, as always, appreciate you being here for my first time ever flying solo. So I got to be honest, this is kind of crazy. But We're going to have a really good show. So I'm going to bring my guest on here. I got Adrian back with me. Hey, Adrian, how are you?
It's coffee morning. Good.
It is morning. Yes. So the last time we had Adrian on, we did our show in the afternoon. I did a bit of a survey, I guess you could say, in our Telegram group. And most people said they prefer to have the show earlier in the day. That's great for me. So I appreciate you being so willing to jump on earlier today. But the title of our episode today is Beating Up on Debt Collectors. This is a follow-up to the previous episode we did with Adrian. So if you guys remember, when was that, Adrian? Was that, I don't remember, earlier in this year. I don't remember when exactly. One of our previous episodes.
Yeah, I want to say St. Patrick's Day, actually.
Oh, that's right. It was back in March. Yes. Yeah. So let's bring everybody up to speed. So for those of you who may have missed, those of you who may have missed that episode, Adrian was served a lawsuit by, and I'm not kidding you when I say this, this is the attorney's name. His name is Sean Umipig or Umipig. I don't know. It's U-M-I-P-I-G. I mean, I'm trying not to laugh when I say that. And I apologize. I don't ever want to make fun of anyone. Okay. That's not who I am. But that is, I'm sorry. That's a terrible name. But anyway, the lead attorney's name is Sean Umipig. Umipig. I don't know. So she was served a lawsuit. He's representing Portfolio. What's the plaintiff's name again?
Yeah, Portfolio Recovery Associates LLC.
Okay, so Portfolio Recovery Associates, and they are debt collectors. So their entire business model is they buy up bad debt, so debt that's been written off by a creditor, and then they unlawfully attempt to collect on it. And it's unlawful for a number of reasons, but because nobody ever holds their feet to the fire, and because they hire a bar association attorney who just does whatever they tell them to do because there's money in it, they're never held to account. Well, until now, because Adrian's holding them to account. So after our last episode, we went over their ridiculous complaint. We talked about her options. So why don't you fill us in, Adrian, on what you did and then where we are today, and then we'll move forward with where we're going to go with this.
Okay. So right afterwards, I opened up Discovery. I had done a request for documents and a request for admissions, which was a series of questions, admit or deny.
Okay.
All these facts. And then I attached an initial affidavit basically stating, hey, this is the first I've heard of this, and I don't owe Portfolio Recovery anything. Like, I do not have a contract with Portfolio Recovery.
Okay.
And from there, they submitted their answers. I used the term loosely.
Mm-hmm.
Basically repeating my bills for the original creditor, which, okay, that does nothing. They've sent this twice now. They've sent the bills. They've sent a statement with a bill of sale and an affidavit showing that Portfolio Recovery bought a pool of charged off accounts from Synchrony Bank.
Okay.
And mine was part of that. That's it. There's no how much they paid for it. There's no how many cases there were in this pool. And then after that, they just straight up said they object to answering anything.
Okay. Real quick, Adrian, we just got a question in the chat here. Are you able to turn your volume of your microphone up a little bit? It gets a little harder to hear you.
Possibly. I'm using my phone, so I don't have the greatest. I can talk louder.
Yeah, that works. That works.
Okay.
Let us know if that's any better there, Alexis. Appreciate you. Okay, so after we talked, right, because you were served a complaint, you filed your answer denying everything.
Yes.
Then they submitted their initial disclosures. You submitted to them your Discovery packet. Basically, and this is what we do, right? What does Dr. Graves say that Discovery is?
The place where cases go to die.
The place where cases go to die, right? So you submitted a request for production of documents, request for admissions, and you submitted a supporting affidavit stating on the record that you have no contract with Portfolio Recovery Associates. You don't know who they are. And then this is the first you're hearing of this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's go over what they sent you back. Because this, you guys, again, go back to jurisdictionary. What does Dr. Graves say when you are answering a request for admissions? How do you answer a request for admissions, Adrian?
Admit, deny, not enough info.
Not enough information. Admit, deny, not enough information. All right. Pretty simple, right? Well, here's the problem. Nobody bothers to tell these Bar Association attorneys that. Because these guys, I don't know where they're learning this. They're not learning this in a simple matter. They're doing everything they can. I mean, gosh, if these guys were politicians, they would be great. Because they're answering these questions like they were a politician. So, and Adrian, just so everyone is aware, Adrian has been kind enough to allow us to share this. You know, again, this is why I do this show, is I want to give you guys real life example, hands-on, of what you can do if you're in this situation, if you find yourself in this situation. We're going to be doing this a lot. I mean, gosh, I've asked you guys to submit suggestions for future shows. You guys have done that gracefully. Megan, thank you. I know, and I apologize, can't remember his name, another gentleman, I believe from Tennessee, not Alexis, but someone else forwarded me a suggestion. Thank you so much. I apologize if I haven't gotten back to you yet. I've just been super busy and slammed. The summertime is just crazy. You know, basketball tournaments for my daughter. I got nothing to hide. I love golf, you guys. I love to play it. So I find myself on the golf course a lot. I apologize. I know. So, but there's a lot that's going on too, right? So in this situation here, Adrian has been very gracious to allow us to go over her active case, and there's nothing wrong with this. This is all public record. There's nothing that we're not violating any laws. We're not violating any rules. We're not giving any legal advice. So if anybody thinks that this is legal advice, please get your head examined, because it's not. We're just sharing what she's doing, making suggestions on the next steps, and going from there. Okay. So this is their response, plaintiff's response to defendant's first request of documents and first request for admissions. Notice it says first. Discovery can last quite a while, you guys. It depends on how complicated the lawsuit is. Now, most of the suits that we're involved in really only require one set of requests for documentation and requests for admissions, especially if we're the plaintiffs. But there's been other lawsuits that have been, discovery has taken years, can take years. Thankfully, we're not involved in suits like that. But this is one here where Adrian, because she's a dutiful student of jurisdictionary, she understood what questions to ask. She understood what documentation to ask for. She submitted it, and then this is their response. Now, again, this is all written up by this Sean Umi Pig guy. Okay. They have some general objections. Oh, really? General objections. He says specific objections to each request are made on an individual basis. In addition to those specific objections, the general objections set forth below apply to all requests for admissions, even if they are not specifically repeated or referenced in the response to the individual requests. Basically, this is what he says. Plaintiff objects to identifying or producing and will not identify or produce any document containing confidential communications between plaintiff and its legal counsel, materials prepared in anticipation of litigation or for trial by plaintiff, mental impressions, conclusions, opinions, or legal theories of plaintiff or its representatives, privileged materials or irrelevant material. Well, duh. We're not asking for that. Did you ask for any of that, Adrian?
I did not, actually.
Okay, so why is that in here? So do you guys remember what's the purpose of objections? Why do we object to things, Adrian? And I'm putting you on the spot because my co-hosts aren't here, so you're the only other one who I can have a conversation with.
Dang it, I was going to listen and go, uh-huh.
So not only are you a guest, you're the co-host today. Congratulations.
Great. That's awesome. Thank you.
So why do we object? What's the purpose of objecting?
I would basically to say no. No, thank you.
Yeah, to get it on the record, right?
Hard pass.
Right? So an objection is the other party wants to do something or they want you to produce something, but you object to it based on a certain moral ground or principle. So let me ask you this. Let's just say, for example, that we're in trial and the other party is asking someone questions. And they ask the question, do you live in Utah? And you say, objection. And the judge says, on what ground? And you're like, well, of course we know they live in Utah, so why do we need to ask that question? Does it make sense to object to that?
Well, maybe I morally hate saying the word Utah.
What we're trying to get at is no. I mean, that's an obvious, we know they live in Utah. We don't need to ask the question. We don't need to object to them asking that question. Save your objections. So what I'm getting at is that this document here, this was a piecemeal document that the attorney here just had on file and he just copied and pasted. That's all it is. So, sorry guys, my dog is going crazy. It only ever does this whenever I get onto a broadcast. So, I know. So, he's objecting to producing anything that Adrian didn't ask for. All right, well, that was a wasted objection. Okay, number two. Plaintiff objects to defendant's requests to the extent they seek to impose on him or to obtain his consent to any greater obligations that are imposed by the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure or otherwise by agreement of counsel. Plaintiff's answers to the requests have been prepared in full compliance pursuant to a reasonable search for information properly requested. Okay, so what are we objecting to exactly here? I don't understand that. Do you?
We're objecting to research.
Oh, okay. So they're objecting to researching. All right, whatever. Okay, number three. Yeah, this entire document, you guys, it just makes your head spin. Number three, plaintiff objects to defendant's instructions and definitions to the extent they could be construed to impose obligations or requirements that exceed those imposed. But again, why? Why is this guy wasting his time? I guarantee you the judge that's reading this is going, you're an idiot. I hope so anyway. I hope so. It's like, you're an idiot. Why in the world? Because if you read her request for production of documents that had your definitions in there and your request for admissions, none of this garbage is in there. So again, you guys, the point that I'm trying to teach you here is don't get lost in the weeds and don't go play in the stupid sandbox of these stupid bar attorneys because they will bury you in the sand. All right, I'm done reading these stupid objections because this is just dumb. Okay. All right, the next thing they do is they have express reservation. They reserve the right to modify or supplement, blah, 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 blah. All right, request for production of documents. So here was your first request. All documents evidencing plaintiff's ability to collect this alleged debt, including, if applicable, certificate of incorporation, articles of organization, certificate of publication, and license as debt collection agency. So here's their response. For those of you who are watching, this is a freaking paragraph. For those of you who are listening, I'm going to read this one, and I'm only going to read this one because I don't want to get I don't want to put you all to sleep at, 11 o'clock in the morning Mountain Standard Time or 1 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time. Here's their response. Plaintiff objects to this request because the defendant has failed to satisfy their initial disclosure obligation, which we're going to talk about here why that is incorrect. They reference the rule, Utah Rule Civil Procedure 26-2C. In addition, the plaintiff further objects because the request is vague, ambiguous, overly broad, unduly burdensome, not limited in time or scope, and appears to seek information protected by the attorney-client privilege and the attorney work product doctrine. Plaintiff also objects to this discovery request to the extent that it seeks information that is immaterial, irrelevant, and not reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. Bullcrap is my answer to that. Plaintiff further objects to the discovery request to the extent that it may be construed as seeking the disclosure of confidential, commercial, and/or proprietary information or trade secrets. Also bullcrap. Notwithstanding the objections and without waiving the same, plaintiff provides the attached documents in response. Now, without going over those attached documents, Adrian, did they provide to you any of these things? Certificate of incorporation, articles of organization, certificate of publication, and license as a debt collection agency?
Not one.
Not a one. Okay. All righty. So that's just great. that is just great. Okay. So I do want to bring this up real quick. So Alexis has a great question. What is the term when people are just trying to delay things to call it out to the court? So this is actually one of the things that they can be sanctioned for, Alexis. So under Rule 11, in most states, it's Rule 11. Utah follows closely the federal rules of civil procedure. So Utah follows closely with that. But basically, it states that any document that is signed by the attorney is not done with the purpose to delay this or that. You could absolutely make the argument that this entire document is just that. And I would be surprised. I won't be surprised because, you know, these judges in these lower courts, they never cease to amaze me. I mean, again, we know how ingrained the Bar Association is into all of this. So we understand how bad it is. They claim attorney-client privilege crap all the time, but none of those four things that Adrian asked for has anything to do with attorney-client privilege. It's not ambiguous. It's not vague. I mean, we asked all documents evidencing their ability to collect this alleged debt, including, if applicable, these four things. They didn't include one of those things. What did they include, Adrian?
The same stuff they provided before. The initial, my bills from the original creditor, a bill of sale, not assignment, a bill of sale, and an affidavit saying they bought a pool of charged off debt from the original creditor.
Okay.
Mine was included, but that's all. They didn't break it down. That is all they've provided twice.
All right. So this is something we need to get across. So the courts have this kind of stuff has come before the courts before, where a debt collection agency has bought a pool of debt. So let's say, for example, because you're the amount they're seeking from you is like close to $1,200, right?
Yeah.
All right. So
might be just, yeah, let's go
right around that, right about $1,200. I guarantee you they didn't pay $1,200 for this. I guarantee it. They probably bought from, because it was Synchrony Bank was the original creditor, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. They probably bought $25,000 worth of charged off debt from Synchrony Bank. And the total amount of charged off is probably close to $200,000 or $300,000. And now they're trying to collect on that entire amount. They have no legal obligation or right to do so. The courts have held that the only amount that they can collect, or that they can try to collect, or that they would have standing to collect, is the amount that they paid for the debt when they bought it. So if they're trying to collect $1,200 from Adrian and they paid $50 for her debt, the courts have held they can only seek $50. So Adrian has every right to seek that information. How much did you buy this debt for? And if they refuse to come into court for that, they have no standing to claim all of that stuff. And so that's one of the things we need to get across. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Isn't there something where this is like unsecured debt or something as
yes.
well?
Ooh. Yes. So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that here in a second. Okay. Now let's go back here real quick, because he says they object to this request because you failed to satisfy your initial disclosure obligation. Let's read that, because it's important to know that you actually did that when your initial disclosure, when you submitted your request for discovery. Mm-hmm. So under Utah Rules Civil Procedure 26, and this is the same in Fed, this is the rule that governs general provisions governing disclosure and discovery. It says that you have to provide initial disclosures before you can seek discovery. Under that rule, C2, let me get to it. It says a party may not seek discovery from any source before the party's initial disclosure obligations are satisfied. Okay. Well, what Adrian did was she submitted her request for discovery and it had her initial disclosures included in it. But because this attorney is a moron and can't figure that out, and also too, because she's representing herself pro se, the court is going to go, you got what you need, dude, knock it off. Okay. So let's move on to the next thing. Number two, agreements. Okay. This is the second request for production. Agreement or agreements between the plaintiff and the defendant containing defendant's wet ink signature relating to the subject credit account. Their response. The plaintiff further objects because it implies the existence of a wet ink signed document is dispositive of whether an agreement exists between the parties. It has to. There's no such thing as an implied contract. That doesn't work. It's an unenforceable contract. Notwithstanding, the plaintiff provides the attached documents in response. Okay, so did they provide that in their response to you, Adrian?
No.
What did they reply? What did they give you? The same thing you had before?
The same thing from their initial disclosure.
Okay. Are you guys seeing a pattern here? They sent their initial disclosure packet and it had all the same information. And we're asking them, okay, I got your initial disclosure packet. Now send me this stuff. And they're saying, oh, it's right here. Oh, okay. So you think that based off of this document, that gives you the right to sue me and to collect this amount plus attorney's fees? I don't think so.
84 pages. So they will send a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just to overwhelm. It was a thick packet of nothing.
It's all an entire, I mean, it's so freaking stupid.
It is.
The way that these lawyers respond to this stuff. And again, they're just used to people. This is the MO. This is their, I said, well, that's the MO the other night to my wife. She's like, MO, what does that mean? I believe it's Latin, modus operandi. So, and it's basically like, this is what they do. Mm-hmm. They sue people. They serve them. People get scared. And because the American Bar Association says that 4 out of 5 people cannot afford an attorney, those 4 out of 5 people just call to do some type of a settlement. That is their business. I mean, can you imagine a more disgusting, well, actually we can, we talked about it earlier, a more disgusting business model than this? I mean, this is right up there with the one we talked about earlier.
It's so, definitely preys on people.
Yes.
I contacted an attorney actually on what to do next.
Mm-hmm. And what did they say?
He basically said, if I can afford an attorney, I can afford to pay this. So the courts will look unfavorably for those who actually retain the attorney.
There you go.
And, he's the one that actually suggested maybe, you know, get a payment plan in place and maybe they'll back off. So that was a whole lot of no help.
Do you guys see the racketeering organization that this is? that the bar association is, because you have a bar certified attorney who's suing you. You went to another bar certified attorney saying, I need some help. They said, oh, the court's going to look at this unfavorably. You might as well just pay this.
Yep.
How are they all not in on this scheme? This is a massive scheme to defraud good people. It's disgusting, you guys. It's disgusting. All right, let's move on. So you asked for an agreement. They didn't supply it. All right. Okay, that's the second thing. Okay, number three, account statements for the period of 3 years prior to and up to and including the alleged date or breach of agreement by the defendant. All right, did they provide those to you?
Not from portfolio. They provided the Amazon, but not portfolio.
Okay. So they provided the Amazon account statements, but not the portfolio. So that would be Synchrony, right? So again, Synchrony is the real party in interest. If they want to sue Adrian, they would have to be the named plaintiff. All right. So we're going back to this whole thing that plaintiff's next response to the court is going to be a motion for judgment on the pleadings. We're going to state a number of things, but you see how all of this ties into this. And this is all evidence, you guys. This is all admissible in court. All right. Number four, checks, receipts, and or other documents evidencing payment by the defendant on the alleged credit account for the period of 3 years prior to and up to, including the alleged default. Okay. Did they send you anything like that?
Nope. Just the initial bills.
Okay.
With my payment history on the initial bills.
All right. Okay. Here's another big one. Assignment or assignments and or bill or bills of sale of alleged debt with purchase amounts signed, executed, or granted by and between plaintiff and or any other person relating to the subject credit account. Okay. There's a whole freaking paragraph here of like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's confidential and we object to that because of this and blah, 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 blah. What did you get in response to that? Anything?
I have a general bill of sale and an affidavit saying, yes, they bought a pool of charged off accounts, of which mine was one. The end.
Oh, this is just ridiculous, you guys. Abso-frickin-lutely ridiculous. Okay, so there's that one. All right, moving on. All right, so here's your next thing. All documents relating to the subject credit account, including account application, records of charge, call log, computer data, correspondence to and from plaintiff, plaintiff's predecessor in interest, or any person and defendant in connection with defendant's alleged credit account. Again, another long, ridiculously paragraph. So for those of you who are watching, you can see this. For those of you who are listening, I'm not going to bore you to death with this ridiculous garbage from this stupid attorney. What did you get in response to that?
They did include, you know, that contract you signed. Yes, I agree mm-hmm. to all the terms.
Yeah.
They included that from, you know, Amazon Synchrony.
Okay. Okay. That's so it. So they provided you the contract that you had in place with Synchrony Bank.
No signature. Just the contract. Yes.
Just the contract. So there's no. Okay. That's interesting. All right. So that was. You only had six requests for documentation and they didn't provide any of it. They just gave you samples of what it could have been. Interesting. Okay. Wow. All right. So a couple of things popped up here. So Alexis asked a great question. So the debt has to be verified from start to finish for it to be legit. 100% correct. We go back to what requires or what must the court have in order for any court order to be a binding judgment? What do they have to have? And I'm not expecting Adrian, you to know this answer, but I drill this in everybody's heads. Go back and watch my videos on subject matter jurisdiction. The court must have subject matter jurisdiction. How does the court get subject matter jurisdiction? Because the court on its own does not have any jurisdiction. They don't have any power to do anything to anyone. Because again, We live in a constitutional republic, right? All power is inherent in we the people. We delegate that power to others to help us ensure justice and tranquility for all. So if we as individuals do not inherently have the power to do anything on our own, how do we grant the court, how do we give the court the jurisdiction it needs in order to issue a binding judgment? Well, we have to be a real party in interest. We have to have standing. We have to come into that court and we say, I am an aggrieved party and I am swearing before God and everyone else here that what I am stating is true. This, the other party has harmed me either physically or emotionally or monetarily. And this is the relief that I need from this court. So has this Portfolio Recovery Associates, have they done that in this case, Adrian?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, based on what we're seeing here, have they put anything into the record that would show that you had an agreement in place with Portfolio Recovery Associates, you breached that agreement, and now they are seeking the court to enforce said breach of agreement?
They have proven Synchrony Bank's case.
They have. They've done a great job of proving Synchrony Bank's case. So here's the, again, you guys, this is how all of this works. There must, essentially, at the end of the day, their cause of action is for a breach of contract. They have failed to prove any contract exists between the named plaintiff and Adrian. We're going to talk about that here in a minute. Let's finish over here with these requests for admissions. Okay, the next one. So, these requests for admissions were pretty straight to the point. And I'm going to read the questions. So the first one is, admit or deny plaintiff is a debt collector. Well, we're unable to admit this because the term debt collector is not defined. But notwithstanding that, and to the extent a response is required, plaintiff admits only to the extent that plaintiff has filed the present action in order to satisfy the account at issue. For those of you who are listening, I mean, Adrian's laughing because, like, my head is starting to hurt reading this garbage from this stupid attorney.
Once you've read it multiple times, you have to laugh because
it's so hard not to.
Yeah.
I mean, heaven help. Heaven help this attorney. Because, again, Adrian, have you ever been in court before?
I have, actually, and this is hilarious. I don't know what's going on in his mind, but it has got to be hard to live in his brain every day with this.
He must. I can't say this. I don't want to be mean again because of you know, he has no control over his name, but he is sure living up to his namesake. I'll tell you right now.
He has control over what he puts on paper.
Seriously. debt collector's not defined, but because a response might be required, we're going to go ahead and say yes, but only because we're trying to get this account satisfied. Again, go back to Dr. Graves. What does Dr. Graves say? How do we respond to a request for admissions?
Don't they, in their initial summons, say Portfolio Recovery Services, a debt collector? Like, they use the term first.
They did. This is why I'm saying is like, no, if the, when the judge reads this, the judge is going to go, they're going to do the same thing I just did. They're going to put their hand on their head and go, you've got to be kidding me. If I put myself in the judge's seat and let's just say, for example, we're in court, I'm going to be like, counselor, in your own documentations, you state you are a debt collector.
Mm-hmm.
How is it you cannot answer this request? Either admit, deny, or not enough information.
Define the word the.
I apologize. I need to know and understand what is the what's the definition of the word "the"?
Yeah. Yep.
That's my best Bill Clinton impersonation. Like that one.
Yep.
I did not have relations.
No, okay, I'm not going to go there. Anyway, all right, let's move on. it's hard not to laugh at this, you guys. I mean, I'm so sorry because this is serious, right? This is Adrian's life. They are attempting to take money from Adrian. She has to defend against this ridiculousness. And
that's the problem is they do this. I have to actually act on this.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people are completely, like, I'm laughing because this isn't my, like I said, I have been in court before. This is not my first round. It is with collection agencies for sure. But
yeah,
how many people just are like, I would have been like, oh, crap. But now that I'm going through the motions and like, well, I guess the actions, not the motions. Now yeah. I can laugh because I'm looking at this and I'm like, wait a minute, because it's no longer word salad or legalese. Now it's like retarded.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to understand what's going through the mindset of this attorney answering these, right? So let's look at this next request. The next request for admission. Plaintiff is collecting the alleged debt on behalf of Synchrony Bank. Okay. I'm going to read the entire answer and see if any of this makes sense to anybody. The plaintiff objects to this request because the defendant has failed to satisfy their initial disclosure. Also, the plaintiff is unable to admit or deny this request because the term collecting is not defined. Notwithstanding the objections and without waiving the same, and to the extent a response is required, the plaintiff denies. Does that make sense to anybody?
At least we got a denial.
You got this denial here at the very bottom part of it, but that's it. So they object. If this objection here, the one because you failed to satisfy your initial, if that was a legitimate objection, you would stop there. Mm-hmm. Why would you keep going on? This is what is called dancing in the weeds, you guys. This is what these stupid attorneys do. This is their legalese garbage. Alexis said it earlier, slippery snake talk. That's exactly what this is. Okay. So how do we interpret this? Well, we're just going to forget everything that's before that. Plaintiff denies. All right. So they deny that they're collecting the alleged debt on behalf of Synchrony Bank. Okay, good. Number three, Synchrony Bank is aware of this action. I'm just going to move on. Plaintiff denies. Okay. So plaintiff denies that Synchrony Bank is aware of this action. Okay. There is no written agreement between the plaintiff and the defendant. Plaintiff denies. Okay. That's interesting. Number four, the plaintiff is denying that there is no written agreement between the plaintiff and the defendant. Wonderful. Produce that document.
They can't. It's too cumbersome, and the cost of producing that would exceed the amount being sought after.
Well, no. Here's the other thing too, Adrian. I know that's what they said, but that is the only document that would give them any kind of standing to support this action. Dr. Graves says this all the time, you guys. Evidence, admissible evidence, is the key to winning. Okay. So we're going to talk about how she's going to formulate her response there. Okay, let's move on. The defendant has not consented to any assignment of the alleged account. Plaintiff denies. Okay, so they deny that you consented. Plaintiff was not assigned the original creditor's obligations under the alleged credit agreement.
Wait a minute.
They deny that.
The defendant has not consented, and they're denying that I did not consent. So they're saying I consented, right?
Plaintiff has not consented to any assignment of the alleged account. They deny that. So they're saying you did consent. Yes.
Okay.
It also says plaintiff was not assigned the original creditor's obligations under the alleged credit agreement. They're denying this one. Okay. So they're saying that they were. Yeah. Great. Prove it.
But then they have a bill of sale. That's not an assignment. That's a purchase.
Exactly. Plaintiff is not the real party at interest. They deny that one. So they're saying they are the real party of interest. Again, further, the plaintiff objects because the request exceeds the number of requests a party is allowed to submit to a party. A party is only limited to 5 requests for admissions. The plaintiff does not have enough information to admit or deny, but to the extent a response is required, the plaintiff denies. Again, why? How do we answer things, guys? C to AZ said it right here. Admit, yep. Deny, not enough information.
Yep.
Real simple. These guys are stupid. Synchrony Bank is the real party at interest. Oh, they're denying that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Synchrony Bank has charged off the alleged debt. Okay. The plaintiff does not have enough information to admit, but the extent to response is required, the plaintiff only admits to the extent that the account at issue was charged off. Isn't that what the question was? The plaintiff is unaware of the identity of the entity that actually executed the charge off. Are you stupid? Did this guy really put that in writing and submit that to the court?
I like that you said put documentation with my affidavit as proof. I literally printed off this.
Yeah. The plaintiff is unaware of the identity of the entity that actually executed the charge off. Well, then how in the world did the plaintiff get this alleged debt? You've got yourself a nice little RICO case here.
Let's do it.
Okay.
If I can do this, everybody can do it. I am not kidding.
Yeah. The plaintiff has number 10, the plaintiff has purchased the debt from Synchrony Bank at less than face value. They don't have enough information. But to the extent a response is required, the plaintiff only admits to the extent that the plaintiff acquired the account at issue from Synchrony Bank. Well, wait a minute. I thought they said they didn't know who charged off. Those two statements contradict themselves. Synchrony Bank has been paid by the plaintiff for the alleged debt. They only admit to the extent that they acquired the account at issue from Synchrony Bank. Plaintiff does not have a contract signed by defendant with a bona fide signature. They deny that. Okay, so they're saying they do have a contract with a bona fide signature. Plaintiff does not have personal knowledge of the validity of a signature on the alleged agreement. They deny that. Defendant requests validation of the alleged debt before and prior to plaintiff's complaint. Oh, you requested. They deny that. Really? Because you did request that, correct?
And not before I was sued. I didn't know this existed before. So that was one of those like answers. I think we just submitted the questions just to see what they would say type thing.
Gotcha.
I could not have because I did not realize until I was served that this was in existence.
Okay. Plaintiff did not send validation requested by defendant prior to the plaintiff's complaint being filed. They deny that. Okay, that's good. I'm done looking at this stupid stuff. All right. Well,
copy and paste it. So once you've read one answer, you pretty much read them all.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So now how do we respond to that? Well, Adrian has a motion for judgments on the pleadings. This is a work in progress. She's going to go through this and take what information she got from her request for discovery and for the admissions, and she's going to use it to say, hey, the purpose of a motion for judgment on the pleadings basically is the same thing as a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. Essentially, it saves the court the time and money of going to trial with a jury because the jury would come to the same conclusion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to show that one right now. Okay. Now, mind you, I wrote this up a while ago. We do need to make some changes to it based on the answers. But again, this is in Adrian's wheelhouse. She's driving this car, so she's going to take full reins of this. She'll rework the document, send it over to me again. I'll take a look at it, make sure it looks good, and then she'll file it with the court. Okay, here's what it says. Defendant moves this court for judgment on the pleadings pursuant to Rule 12C, the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure, against the plaintiff, Portfolio Recovery Associates. As demonstrated below, plaintiff's complaint fails to state a claim for which this court can grant relief. Additionally, plaintiff's complaint fails to invoke this court's jurisdiction over the subject matter of the complaint. As a result, defendant respectfully requests that the court dismiss all of plaintiff's claims with prejudice. Request for judicial notice. Defendant hereby requests this court take judicial notice pursuant to Utah Rule of Evidence 201B and 201C2, including the pleadings filed for the record in this cause for purposes of the defendant's motion for judgment on the pleadings. So what are we doing here, guys? We're saying all the documents that have been filed, we're asking the court to take judicial notice of that. Okay, here's the introduction.
One thing I did have a question on, because yes. In their opening statement, he copy and pasted that their discovery was not complete. They still had discovery to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to force them to be like, if you had it, you would have filed it.
Yep.
So that's...
So a motion for judgment on the proceedings, on the pleadings, is appropriate after the pleadings have closed, but early enough not to delay trial. Pleadings are closed after an answer is filed.
Okay.
Okay? So you filed an answer.
Yes.
Okay? So you could have filed this as soon as you filed your answer. But again, we're smart, right? We want these guys to dig their own grave.
They did.
And they have. Okay. Introduction. Plaintiffs have filed a complaint for what appears to be a breach of contract cause of action and have requested from this court relief in the amount of $1,100, plus attorney's fees and other costs this court deems appropriate. According to plaintiff's complaint, defendant opened an account with Synchrony Bank with an account ending in 9789. Additionally, plaintiffs allege that when the account was closed, there was an amount owed of $1,200-ish. The complaint alleges that the account was then assigned to the named plaintiff in this case. The complaint additionally states that the account was charged off for the amount of $1,200. Based on this information above, the allegations taken from plaintiff's complaint and the lack of proof establishing contractual obligation to the plaintiffs during discovery, the plaintiff's complaint fails to state a viable claim in support of the request that this court grant their claim for relief for the reasons listed below. So we might want to change this last paragraph here. So okay. Based on the allegation, based on this information above, the allegations taken from the plaintiff's complaint, and you can say something like, and information taken from defendant's request for production of documents and request for admissions, all that stuff. But you're going to attach.
Okay. What's that? So include the fact that I have asked and there was still lack of proof.
Exactly. I mean, we said that right here.
Okay.
Or you can say something to the effect of, based on this information above, the allegations taken from complaint, and the lack of proof, or something of the undeniable fact that there is no proof proving a contractual obligation to the plaintiffs, something along those lines. I mean, you can word it how it makes sense for you, but okay. You can see what I'm talking about. Because you're going to attach their response to your request for discovery and request for admissions to this motion as an exhibit.
Okay. So I was going to leave it like the lack of proof because that still stands. But
and that's fine. I mean, you can do it however you want. I'm just saying if you wanted to add something here of,
okay,
and maybe what you can do is you can do a footnote here, and under the footnote, it would say C exhibit A. Yes. C exhibit A. Defendant or plaintiff's response to defendant's request for admissions and production of documents. Okay. So while you're making that note, I'm going to keep going. Standard on motion for judgment on the pleadings. Under the Utah Rules of Civil Procedure, after the pleadings are closed, but early enough not to delay trial, a party may move for judgment on the pleadings. Dismissing a case based on the pleadings is appropriate when the moving party has clearly established that no material issue of fact remains to be resolved and the party is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Now, let me ask you, have we done that here?
I think so.
I would agree. Is there any material issue that still remains to be resolved? Meaning, is there... Their cause of action is a breach of contract. What are the essential elements of a breach of contract? Well, the first one is there must be a contract. Number two is one of the two parties will have breached that contract. And the third is that that party suffered damages as a result. Well, they can't even fulfill the first.
Yeah.
So I believe that there is no material issue of fact. And you are entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Okay. A motion for judgment on the pleadings is treated as a motion to dismiss. And therefore, dismissal is appropriate if the complaint fails to state a claim for relief that is plausible on its face. Again, on its face, you take the complaint, you take the available evidence. There is no, that again, at the end of the day, there's no contract. No contract, no claim for relief.
Well, they can't have a contract if they don't even know what they're doing, as they don't know what debt collectors are.
Exactly. All right. As explained below, plaintiff's complaint fails to state a claim for relief that is plausible on its face. As a result, the court should dismiss all of plaintiff's claims. Argument in support of judgment on the pleadings. Number one, the plaintiff's complaint filed in this action fails to state a cause of action on the following grounds. Number two, the breach of contract cause of action fails to state a claim for relief due to the failure of plaintiffs to provide a copy of the alleged original contract as required by Rule 1002 of the Utah Rules of Evidence. I would add here, I don't know if I would say a copy of the alleged original contract. I would say due to the failure of plaintiffs to provide a copy of the original contract between plaintiffs and defendant as required by Rule 1002 of the Utah Rules of Evidence.
Excuse me. Well, should I get rid of alleged?
Yeah, I would get rid of alleged.
Excuse me, Wally.
Yeah, you're fine. Did you choke on your coffee?
I'm choking on the grounds at the bottom of my face.
Oh, that's the worst part.
Okay, original contract between...
Due to the failure of plaintiffs to provide a copy of the original contract between, I would say certified copy, actually.
Okay.
To provide a certified copy of the original contract between plaintiffs or named plaintiffs and the defendant. Make sure you state that, because that is what is the issue of this case.
Okay. Of course I can't type.
Yep. Yep. They don't have it. It doesn't exist. Okay.
Okay. As required by rule. Okay. Done.
Number three, the allegations as alleged in the plaintiff's complaint and submitted discovery answers are insufficient and do not establish a contractual relationship, as the material terms are missing, as in any contract established between the plaintiffs and the defendant. Perfect. Leave that how it is. Number four, specifically at paragraphs 2 and 3 in the general allegations, the plaintiff alleged that the defendant opened an account with Synchrony Bank. And at the closing of that account, the defendant was alleged to have owed $1,200 to Synchrony Bank. However, by the plaintiff's own complaint, plaintiff cannot establish the essential and material terms of this contract, as the contract was not attached as an exhibit to this complaint. In fact, there is no evidence of any contractual relationship between the plaintiffs and Synchrony Bank in this case.
Do you want me to add here to this complaint or the answers to my requests?
You can put that, just something along that, or answers to the subsequent request for discovery. Yeah, that's totally fine. All right, number six. Additionally, the plaintiffs further hinder their claim, as at paragraph 4, they state that Synchrony Bank assigned the account to plaintiffs but failed to attach proof of this assignment with the proper endorsements as required under Utah law. Perfect. And I love how you added this in here. This is the Utah commercial. This is the Utah's equivalent of the Uniform Commercial Code. Transfer of instrument, rights acquired by transfer. If a transferor purports to transfer less than the entire instrument, negotiation of the instrument does not occur. The transferee obtains no rights under this chapter and has only the rights of partial assignee. Perfect. Did you pull that from one of my documents? I'm just curious.
You put it in there, so yes.
Oh, okay. I guess I did. I can't even remember what I do sometimes. okay. A complaint based on a written instrument does not state a cause of action until the instrument or an adequate portion thereof is attached to or incorporated in the complaint. Perfect. In this instant case, the plaintiff's complaint is inadequate to state a cause of action for breach of contract because the complaint fails to show with evidentiary support the existence of a contract and one that this court can enforce. Make sure you state or just reiterate the existence of a contract between plaintiffs and defendant.
Okay.
That is the one that's at issue. I mean, we're not, because you're not disputing the existence of a contract between yourself and Synchrony Bank. No. You're disputing one between yourself and the named plaintiffs. Here, the plaintiff cannot establish an entitlement to relief within the four corners of the complaint for a breach of contract cause of action. Perfect. As a result of the plaintiff's failure to attach evidence of the alleged contract required by Rule 1002, the plaintiff's complaint fails to state a claim for relief and must be dismissed with prejudice.
Should I just put between plaintiffs and defendant after each contract?
Yeah, that's what I would do. Just add that in there, just for extra. Yeah. As to the claim that the plaintiffs have failed to invoke this court's subject matter jurisdiction, this court must dismiss this action for the following reasons. Number 12, the plaintiffs have failed to support their complaint with an affidavit or other evidentiary pleading that this court could use to verify plaintiffs' claims. The plaintiff's complaint states that the real party in interest is actually Synchrony Bank, not the plaintiffs. It would appear that Synchrony Bank is not even aware of this action, let alone gave the plaintiff the right to sue on their behalf. Based on this information, the plaintiffs have failed to invoke this court's jurisdiction, and this court should dismiss the action for want of jurisdiction. Perfect. In conclusion, under the standard announced in Bell Atlantic Corp. v. Twombly from the United States Supreme Court, the plaintiff's complaint fails to survive defendant's motion for judgment on the pleadings because plaintiff has not supplied specific factual allegations to overcome the defects in the claims, which are: A, the additional claims are legally incompatible with the existence of an express written contract, again, between plaintiff and defendant. And claims of liquidated damages for breach thereof. And B, the plaintiff has failed to invoke this court's jurisdiction with a sworn statement from someone with personal knowledge of injury or that can prove damages. Perfect. I love it. You're going to freaking nail these guys on the head. I love it.
I just need to add a couple of things and I can get this all signed and ready to go.
Yep. You'll put respectfully submitted this blah, 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 blah day. You'll sign it. You're going to attach your affidavit in support, right? You're going to say everything in my motion is true. All that. So another question here. Yeah, and make sure you put on there Diesel for We the People. Make sure you say these claims should be dismissed with prejudice. That's very important because you don't want them to be able to come back and sue you again under the same thing. Because that's where res judicata comes into play. Okay?
I need it to be now, closed.
Yeah. Now, the reason why that's important is because this other action they're suing you under, you can go back and say, I just had this case thrown out because you guys couldn't prove you had standing, and now you're coming after me again. This is a frivolous lawsuit, and I'm going to be seeking sanctions. Now you're going to really put their money where their mouth is. And that's actually one of those things where you can call this Umi Pig moron and say, hey, do you want to consider withdrawing this lawsuit? Because you guys don't have standing. I'm going to prove you don't have standing. And if you continue with this, I'm going to ask the court to file sanctions. So, Alexis brings up another good question. So just because someone buys the debt, it does not mean they buy an automatic contract with you. The only way they can act on it is to represent. That is true. Okay. There are certain contracts that are assignable. So we talked about this in previous episodes. We did one on mortgages, right? Mortgage contracts are assignable. You don't have any right to tell the mortgage company who they can sell it to. However, you do have a right to know the terms of the sale. So if it's sold for less than face value, well, you agreed to pay the full amount to the original creditor. If they choose to sell it for less than face value, well, how in the world are you still required to uphold that original obligation to the new buyer? when they bought it for less. So you have a right to know that stuff. In these types of contracts, credit card accounts, revolving credit card accounts, right? So if you get a card, let's say you get a $5,000 credit limit for a Visa card and you charge $2,000 and you lose your job and they end up canceling your card. Well, they can't sell that to someone else because a credit card is a revolving series and offers to contract. It's not an open-ended or it's not a closed-ended contract, one where you get a $5,000 loan and that's it. And you are unable to pay that $5,000. That contract is assignable. But a revolving credit, like a credit card, the Supreme Court has held that those contracts are not assignable because they're a continuous series of offers to contract. So, again, these people don't seem to care. They still file this crap anyway. Right, Adrian?
Multiple times, yeah.
Multiple times. Yep. So you have so what you're going to do, so just so everyone knows, if you're in the same situation, and again, Adrian has been kind enough to put this stuff up onto Telegram. So we'll post her motion for judgment on the pleadings, excuse me, in the Telegram group. So you guys can look at it and see. Then what she's going to do is she's going to file with the court the motion. She's going to get an affidavit in support of that motion. That affidavit will be notarized. So now it is sworn testimony before the court. She's going to attach as exhibits the answers and everything she got back for her request for discovery. Now the ball is in the other idiot's court, so to speak, for them to come and prove their claims. And they won't be able to do it. They can't do it. So, all right. Wow. That's it.
I just got to get on my affidavit.
Yes.
I've been kind of doing a point by point for everything that's happened. Basically, my affidavit that I submitted first.
Okay.
And then adding what the responses I received.
Okay.
And then referencing back to the exhibits.
Basically, your affidavit.
Out and say what I have filed was true to my knowledge.
So your affidavit really only needs to be three or four lines.
Okay.
Line number one is everything stated in your motion for judgment on the pleadings is true and correct to the best of your knowledge, to your personal knowledge. Line number two, you are not now, nor have you ever been, in receipt of any any contract or obligation with the named plaintiff in this action. And then number three is you can say, it is not now, nor has it ever been my intention to avoid paying a lawful debt that I may legally owe. Something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're basically, the way you want to state affidavits that are in support of your documentation is irrefutable facts. Someone is going to have to file a counter affidavit saying that's not true. And here's how it's not true. And if they file a counter affidavit, then you guys both bring your pieces of evidence to the court and the judge would decide or the jury would decide. Okay, but since they don't have the evidence, they can't.
My first affidavit, that was where I was basically stating my case. This time I'm basically stating, well,
what you put in your motion for judgment on the pleadings, everything is true and correct to the best of your knowledge. And you're swearing under the penalty of perjury. If you need a sample of what an affidavit is, look for one in the Telegram group. I posted a couple of them for cases that I've filed. They're short, sweet, to the point.
Yeah, so I think I just got lost in the weeds trying to make my arguments.
Yeah, you don't need to. Yeah, and you don't need to worry about going, you know, I am a living person. I am a woman. You don't need to. The court knows that. You don't need to do any of that stuff.
Matt and I did that on my first one.
Yeah, I noticed that. You know, we don't need to do these things. You know, that comes down to the patriot mythology stuff, right? And courts are like, oh boy, one of these people. No, you don't need to do that. You just need to say, I'm of competent age to testify. I have personal knowledge of the pleadings and papers filed in this case. Everything in my motion is true and correct, just like what I stated. So I'll give you the first crack at it, and then I'll make some suggestions, and then you can get it filed with the court. So
okay, cool. And then
now let's just be prepared for what could happen. Okay, when you file this with the court, The opposing side is going to be given an opportunity to file an objection to it, which they more than likely will. You get to file a response to that objection. More than likely, the court is going to set this motion for a hearing. So you'll have to be prepared to go in and speak to it, which I believe you are. And then the court will do one of two things. Either they'll be smart enough to realize there's nothing in the record that supports this guy's claim and dismiss the case, or, which is the more likely of the option, is they're going to deny your motion and they're going to move forward anyway. So we have to be prepared for that, because if that's the case, well, wait a minute. Did the plaintiff give this court the jurisdiction it needs to adjudicate this matter? Well, we've just pointed out that they didn't. So you're going to, if that happens, I'm just preparing you. If that happens, you're going to file a motion to reconsider and point out the facts again and use the record as evidence. There is nothing in the record to support this. If the judge is stupid and denies that again, you have everything you need to go and file for an extraordinary writ. And we talked about this in other episodes, and it's called a writ of prohibition. A writ of prohibition is appropriate where a court is attempting to exercise jurisdiction that the record clearly shows it does not have. Okay? So should it come to that, we'll do an episode on that. I'm praying it doesn't, because it's pretty clear to me, it's clear to you, and it's clear to anybody else that would go into the courtroom that they do not have the jurisdiction that they need. But stranger things have happened. So, okay. With that, yep. Any last questions that I can answer for you, Adrian, on anything?
No, that was it. I was kind of banging my head against the wall between what to put in the motion, what to put in the affidavit, to repeat it or what. So this answers.
Good.
That answers that.
And don't be afraid to post your stuff in the group. I mean, there are other people. Alexis is full of knowledge.
Everything. I'm like, yes.
Diesel for We the People has got a lot of good stuff too. C to AZ is always in there. So we've got a lot of good people in the group that are really helpful. So post your questions there, post your motion, say, hey, this is my draft. If you want to post it as a PDF or as a Word document, whatever, they're always really good to respond. So
I didn't want to step on Bryce. He's got a lot more going on than I do right now. So
no, you're fine. You know, and Bryce is a good dude. I met Bryce personally. He actually lives closer to you than he does to me. But again, that's the crap that we're dealing with. He's got some ridiculous town telling him what he can and cannot do with his property. Back the freight train up, people. By what authority? You don't have any rights in my property. I purchased this. I own this. You don't. Go get a court order. Until then, back away. So, okay. With that, everybody, I'm going to we're going to end it early. Well, I say early. I mean, most of our shows have been an hour and a half. So here we are, an hour and 15 minutes, and we're calling it early. Adrian, thank you so much for being willing to come back on again. I really appreciate you doing that. For everybody
helping, like everybody that has helped. Thank you.
You bet. We are going to try and do another show next week. I don't know if I'll be able to do one on Wednesday or if we're going to get back to the usual Fridays, but I am going to move it to the mornings. So plan on having shows earlier in the day. So for those of you who are able to attend, thank you so much for being here. Again, I can't stress this enough. You guys, please, 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 please share the show. Like this video if you're watching it on YouTube. Like the podcast. That helps us in the algorithms. Subscribe to our videos, subscribe to our channels. It really helps us get the word out. We just want to get as much of this information out to as many people as we possibly can. And this is the way we do it. So with that, everybody, thank you so much. God bless you all. Until next time.
Thank you. Have a good night. Day.